Welcome to Disrupt Disruption, a series of intimate interviews with global thought leaders and practitioners operating at the intersection of business, leadership, and technology. We're discussing all things innovation and disruption and how to not only survive but thrive in these times of exponentially accelerating change. Trusted by CEOs, founders, and leaders globally for the latest take on business models, methods, culture, and leadership, we cut to the chase, debunk the hype, and get real. You're in great company. I'm your host, Pascal Finette, co-founder of Be Radical. Hey, everybody. Pascal here again. I am incredibly stoked to be here with Vanessa Liu. She is VP of SAP IO, which is SAP's foundry for particularly women-led and minority-led or diverse-led teams, startups all around the world. Has an incredible background building her own companies, being with Andy Russell building Trigger Media and out of Trigger Media building two of those companies, leading those companies. So deep in the trenches of actually building, as well as has a storied career over at McKinsey. So there's a bit of a consultancy background in here. Vanessa dials in today from beautiful Amsterdam in the Netherlands. I am super stoked to have you here, Vanessa. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Vanessa, my first question, I always love to ask that question because everybody seems to have a different definition of it. How do you even think about and or define innovation or disruption? And or do you even use those terms?
I think about disruption and innovation interchangeably. And it wasn't until like the last few years reading various academic papers that lots of professors think that it's a very separate type of concept between the two. The most famous of which obviously is Professor Clayton Christensen's definition of disruption and how that is different from innovation. Let's just take innovation more broadly as a concept. I just think that is about how do you do new things? How do you launch new businesses, new products, new services in a way that has not been done before? A very simple definition when it comes to that. And a lot of corporates, because I've seen how corporates do this during my time at McKinsey, I was working with our clients so that they could build new digital media businesses so that they can innovate. That is the term that companies use all the time. And then the term disruption has come in over the last few years, particularly over the last 15 years or so, ever since it was coined in the Harvard Business Review, which is, well, this is about doing something differently. There's something that has happened before, but you're doing it really differently. And a lot of the current incumbents don't even realize that that change is happening, or they're just not prepared to get that change, which is slightly different from innovation. You're still, of course, doing something new, but it also supposes that there is something that's been happening in the background. The way I see it is just how can you find new businesses to launch and new products and a new way of doing things? So I boil it down to that essence, actually.
And how do you go about this? How do you make this practical in the work you've done in your world?
So starting off when I was a consultant at McKinsey, you know, I started consulting in 1998. It was like at the beginning of the first dot-com boom. And I remember my third project, the staffing coordinator saying, look, you know, do you want to do this e-commerce project? And I'm like, what is e-commerce, right? And she was having a lot of trouble describing it. But she was, well, you know, like the way that, you know, it was an insurance company. You know, the way that people get insurance nowadays, we're trying to see how they could do it in a different way, using your computer. And she could not describe it. And I think about it a lot because I'm like, that is innovation. It's because you can't describe what that new thing is going to be. And we actually ended up doing something, you know, pretty incredible because this insurance company was, look, we want to embrace what is going on when it comes to the internet. And they decided to launch a free ISP back in the days when that was a thing to do. And so that was how I learned innovation, corporate innovation firsthand, because here was a very, very established insurance company saying, hey, we want to launch a free ISP. Why? Because we want to own these consumers that other people are going to get attention from. And maybe this way we can convert them and get them to buy more of our products. It was like a very interesting approach, and I had the most fun. In 8 months, got together a team of people back then who were web designers and people who actually built websites. Back then, you would have huge teams building websites. And in 8 months, we launched the fourth leading ISP in the Dutch market, and then it got acquired soon afterwards. And it was just exhilarating because I got to build it from scratch. And so I started doing that for many different clients, and mainly in media. So there was one that was a UK magazine publisher, and they had these communities of people who were enthusiasts in motorcycling and in golfing. And they said, look, we know that if we don't build something compelling, we're going to just lose our audience to people who are going to do this. So could you help us build new content commerce community websites for these businesses? And I remember thinking, huh, okay, what does that mean? Like, they had a presence already, but it was essentially taking their print articles and putting it online, but nothing that was truly dynamic and really fulfilling that. So again, I rolled up my sleeves, said, okay, that's the mandate. Then let's figure out what this is. And just started on the motorcycling side. I started hanging out with like a lot of the motorcycling editors and going to these ride outs and seeing what they do when motorcyclists get together. They actually do all these meetups where they just check one another's bikes out. And I'm okay, I get it. You know, what we really need to do is to have a business that where you can buy parts and customize your bike. And why don't we try to figure out something with that? So that was what we did. And so after a few months, we launched these new sites for them so that they were able to do that. So, I mean, that's what I've done again and again and again in my career, which is to take some type of idea and just say, well, what can we do with it that is new? But knowing what the consumer needs or the customer needs are, and trying to make that better, trying to improve it. So that's been how I've been translating that at work. And that led to my founding a couple of businesses in media and commerce. One of the businesses I always talk about now, it's our company is called Fevo. It's still going strong. It's a Series B stage company. And what we do is we power the social commerce engine for a lot of companies. But what is social commerce and what does that mean? In the sports and live events instance, we power the group ticketing for about 75% of the teams in the US. And so if you think about how do people get together, you know, people have been getting together to go to games for the longest time. Usually what you do is you want to go with friends. But you're usually capped, right? There is that angle where above 20 people for that organizer gets really unwieldy. Are you in or not? How are you going to pay me? And are we going to go to this thing together? The organizer does it for the love of bringing everybody together. But maybe about 5 or 10% of the population are people like that. But a lot of people enjoy doing things in groups. And group ticketing for the longest time has been a manual business where you have to call basically somebody and say, I want 100 tickets and I'll figure out who those 100 people will be. So we created the technology so that people can actually get together, get their friends can invite their friends. And so very soon you have a group of 100 people and then everybody pays their own way. The person who starts it doesn't have to worry about that at all. And so it just makes it easier for people to do group experiences. So it's about looking at things in a different way. So that's really been the focus of my career.
There's a few things you said which really made my ears like prick up a little bit. One was when you mentioned that when you did your ISP e-commerce, what is even e-commerce project? And I do remember those times, 1998, very vividly. There's an interesting question I have for you, which is, do you think that these changes, can you be planful about those? Because it sounded like someone had a hunch, as in, man, I'm feeling something is happening here. I'm feeling the ground is shifting. The conditions in the market are shifting. We need to do something about it. And then leading to, let's build an e-commerce site. Is this something you can be planful about?
Maybe it's because of my consulting background. You can recognize when things are going to be changing. You can recognize the trends. You could see the data around it. And there are a lot of indicators around that, that things are going to shift. What are the mega trends happening out there when it comes to, for instance, demographic shifts? We know now that populations are going to start graying, for example. So we know that when it comes to products and services for consumers, we're going to have to think about that. So you know something is going to happen. Now, the question of who is going to do that, that's where it's very unknown. So I think you can always have hunches of where changes are going to happen. And especially if you're good at reading data and looking at predictive indicators. But I don't think you would know exactly what that's going to look like. I remember there was an example way back when there was a competition before planes were designed, when people said, what do you think flying vehicles are going to look like? And then people had to send in basically sketches of what they thought. And a lot of the drawings that came back were basically like cars or like buggies with wings or something, or just like, you know, we're going to figure out some way where the buggies are going to be in the air, right? And I think it was this one person who was just observing birds and sketched out something that looks like the modern day jets that we have today. And it's so interesting because people knew that that was happening, but yet what does that look like? You just don't know.
In that context, you mentioned that with your motorcycle experience, you went out into the field and you immersed yourself. How critical a piece of work is that? Because my experience is that the higher up you go into an organization, typically, if it's a large organization, the less contact the person has with the consumer.
Yeah. I think it's so critical. What problem are you trying to solve? I think when it comes to any business building, thinking about innovation, it goes back to what pain point are you trying to correct? Why should there be innovation? And I always think that the only way you can answer is to really understand what is going on now and to observe. And so I think field research and understanding your customers, if they're consumers or other enterprises and businesses, you have to know what makes them tick. Maybe it's because I always think about what gets people to make the decisions that they make is driven by the need that they have. That's why I think when it comes to building new businesses, if you don't have that DNA of saying, look, I'm just going to spend as much time with the customer as possible, I just don't think you're going to be successful in the long run.
Can I ask you a slightly heretical question?
Yeah,
given that you actually worked at a consultancy firm, one of the big four, of course, how do you differentiate between the lived experience, the experience you mentioned when you went out with the bikers and literally went up to their meetups, versus what I see a lot of organizations do? They buy the report. They go to the consultancy and say, please give me the 212-page PowerPoint report on what do I need to know about the market.
That happens all of the time. And at McKinsey, at least, I was schooled by mentors who said, okay, the report is going to give you probably 500 different directions. How are you going to figure out which one is right? Or what are the hypotheses you're going to have? And so anything to do with building something new always boiled down to you have to understand the needs. And if you don't have any primary research on that, we're not going to be able to come up with something innovative. And I think back then, at least in the consulting side, like everything is about crunching numbers, right? You look at all these reports and, okay, let's figure out what is the potential growth rate of X, Y, and Z. For me, it became kind of like a hallmark of the work that we did was always then let's do the primary research. How many interviews do we need to do? How many consumers do we need to observe or focus groups we need to hold? We need to do that. That's the only way we're going to get towards the right answer. Because it's one thing to read about, hey, motorcycling parts comprises X million a year, and it's growing like this. It's probably pretty static. It just grows with the number of bikers that are out there. You're like, okay. And then you're like, oh, you know, the Harley Davidson, those type of traditional bikes are growing faster this year versus a sports bike. You're like, okay, then maybe what we should do is only spend time on the traditional bikes and forget about the sportier bikes or something like that. As an example, the insights that we gleaned by being out there in the meetup was by saying, look, actually, everybody who had bikes, they were really proud of it. Of course, they wear it like their badge of honor, but they're also just want to express their individuality. Like that tailpipe is different on practically every single bike. Why? It's because you can do it. Like 90% of bikes are customized in some way because you want to do something about that. So it's another thing to see it. And you're just, we can't just focus on one segment.
If you were taking your very unique perspective as a company builder and working with people who are building companies, if you were to take that perspective and let's say big client XYZ walks in and says, okay, we want to be innovative, we want to be disruptive, how do we get started? What is it we need to do? What do you give them as advice? What are the 1, 2, 3, 4 things you think are non-negotiable?
I always think a lot of it starts from where in the organization is innovation going to happen? And what are the reasons for doing so? I see so many innovation groups which are put to the side. It's almost like a check mark to say, hey, we're innovative. We can include that in our annual report. Because why? We have an innovation group that nobody listens to. They have no budget. It's really about disseminating ideas, but nothing ever gets done. Those just don't work. I think it has to be a function that reports as high as possible, ideally to the CEO directly or directly to the board, and where it is at arm's length, where you give it autonomy. You don't care about whether or not it's going to be cannibalizing for your current businesses. And that type of mentality, a lot of companies say, oh, yeah, we get it. We've read the articles that you have to do that. But do they really do it? No, they don't. And so that's where I would say, first thing is, if you really want to succeed, what are your reasons for doing so? Because if it's just a tick mark, it's not going to survive because you're going to push it far down the organization. The second part is, who are you going to have it roll up to? It should be basically somebody so high up and that person makes the call and nobody else, because they need to really be thinking about the future of the company. And not so deep in the weeds of, oh, you know, actually, this might be really scary for this part of the organization. I think that's the second part. A third part is, are you going to give it sufficient budget, really, really meaningful budget to start new things? I think so much of the times I've seen so many companies try to build their own businesses and they started from scratch, like, okay, yeah, we'll give you $500,000 here, $500,000 there. It's like the same formula every single time. That's not how backing new businesses works. Sometimes these businesses might actually need a lot of investment. Are you willing to do that? Just how an investor is going to do that. And having that type of outside perspective, that's another area to really think about as well.
And then in the inverse, what is it you find that companies stumble over? As you're, you know, like observing companies doing this kind of work, probably even in the startup world, what are the common like failure points?
It is always down to, okay, great. We're bringing in these companies. My vantage point is we bring in companies to work with and so that they become partners at SAP. And so that angle of, okay, innovation is happening out there. We know we're not going to work on it. We want to bring it in. It's one thing to say, yes, we're going to do that. It's another thing to have the courage to say, oh, that company is doing something so innovative, but it actually might be clashing with our product strategy and our roadmap. And are we prepared for that? That is where the rubber meets the road, right? Yes, I will adopt your baby as long as it doesn't eat up mine. You know, this is the whole entire perspective. And that's what I see companies hitting again and again and again, whether or not they're trying to bring a company in and they're worried, like, wait a second, this is too close to home. Or they're just, look, we're just too risk averse and we're not going to invest enough in it, is another thing that I see a lot of the time.
In that context, how likely do you think incumbents, from your perspective, incumbent organizations, established organizations are actually in succeeding in all of this? Is there hope for them? Is, I guess, the short version of the question.
I think there's hope. I think it's hard. It's really hard to get right. And I think that's why there's so many innovation consultancies that are around, and why every company, they know that they need to grow into new markets and new businesses. You need innovation. Whether or not that's true disruption, that's an argument for another day, but they need to innovate. Do they need to think about how do you do things differently to constantly meet the evolving needs of your customers?
Right.
But if you want to find a really significant new business, you have to set yourself up for success by structuring it in the right way. And I think very few organizations are able to truly learn like that and think like that unless they've gone through it before and they fell flat on their face. And so I've heard that many times. I've heard, for instance, corporates trying to start funds, and where the first fund, they're just like, yeah, we'll do it off the balance sheet. We'll just do, you know, $10 million here. And it doesn't go anywhere because they start investing in companies and they just realize the business starts saying, wait, this is competitive to us. What you're investing in right now is what we're doing. And they just don't know how to handle that. That it's almost like a growing pain that you have to go through. I think there are examples of companies that are doing this really well. I've been observing what Logitech is doing, and they have 24, they're like, the CEO has 24 direct reports, and which is crazy to think about. And when you ask him why, it's because that's how they roll up their new businesses. They report directly to him, which I think is the way to go. So I think there are models of success out there. There are companies that do that extremely well, but it takes a lot of learning and it takes a lot of guts.
You today work mostly with startups. So you nurture startups in the context of a B2B massive international company, SAP, of course. Not saying this about SAP, but just as a general observation, do you think disruptive innovation, the stuff out there, is this something you're better off doing externally, meaning you better off invest into or nurture relationships to startups versus truly trying to do this inside of your organization?
That's a great question. I've thought about that a lot. I think I have not seen many examples of companies building it internally. It's almost like you could count or you could point to those case studies. They're few and far between, right? You look at Google and what they've been able to do. So beyond search, what they've done on Android and all these different products, it's because they've created this ability so that you can actually do things and take those risks. I think I would like to say, look, it's something where most of the time you could try to do it. You'll learn a lot that way, but you'll probably succeed more by keeping it externally. Is in most cases, I think it takes very special leaders and also having the right people in place so that you have these folks who could literally run around and do their own thing without somebody saying like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. That's very antithetical to how a lot of companies operate.
Vanessa, on these wise words, thank you so much. This was a really insightful conversation. I love the fact that we added to the growing body of conversations we're having with a very unique perspective coming from a true operator and someone who comes from a startup world, but also understands, of course, the world of quote unquote big corporations. And I really loved your insights about going into the market, identifying the market needs, like the necessity for you to be out there in the trenches and doing the actual primary research. Personally, I really like that approach. Is something I somewhat preach to our clients. You have to be out there. You have to do this work. Also love your perspective on innovation or disruptive innovation as something you do internally versus externally. Super insightful. So thank you so much. This was really, really, really insightful.
No, thank you so much for having me, Pascal.
Hey, it's Pascal. Thanks for tuning in on this episode of Disrupt Disruption. If you want more, check out the other episodes we have on this podcast. Also know that this is part of an effort of us writing a book about disruption. So keep your eyes and ears peeled towards that. And if you liked it, do us a favor. Go on your podcasting platform of choice, iTunes, Google Play, whatever it is, and just like this. There's some weird algorithm thing, which, you know, if you like it, they will like us. So do me a favor, do that. And if you've got any questions, any comments, anyone I should talk to, drop us an email. Easiest email address for me to reach it is p@finet.com. With that being said, thank you so much for listening, and I will hear you here soon.